Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Back to school, masks, and inartfully crafted campaign emails. It's all part of today's Dakota Political Junkies Roundtable. Plus, Kennedy Noem leaves the governor's staff, and we remember former Attorney General Mark Meyer-Henry. We're joined today by Michael Card. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, South Dakota. Also with us, Jonathan Ellis. He's an investigative reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks. I got to have some of this. Good morning, everybody.
Excellent. Let's start and talk about the pandemic and the politics of the pandemic. And Dr. Wendell Hoffman with Sanford is going to come on our program next Tuesday, I believe. We're going to have a longer conversation from his point of view about how politics can impact public health in some pretty drastic ways. But we've got some examples of how politics seeps into conversations and decision makings, and probably even your, you know, school committee meeting. If you're trying to figure out what your committee looks like, you probably have quickly figured out where people stand politically on the spectrum. Let's talk about this campaign email first, and specifically the idea and the science behind masks. And Jonathan, Governor Noem's office, or the campaign for Kristi Noem, sent an email, and the governor's office clarified and referred reporters back to, you know, previous statements the governor had made. Tell us a little bit about how this communication has unfolded.
Well, her campaign sent out basically a fundraising email last week that, in bold, a paragraph said that the governor was not issuing a statewide distance learning mandate and encouraging families to send children back to school without masks, it said. And so a day later, her senior advisor, Maggie Seidel, had responded and sent an email out to people on their press list, I assume, suggesting that it was an inartful comment written by a campaign on the campaign staff, and that the governor has, always suggested that if people want to wear masks, they can wear masks. It is interesting. It has been a contradiction of sorts between what she has said with what the Department of Health has suggested, and the Department of Health has, since the early days of this, suggested that people in public settings should probably wear some kind of cloth face covering. And that's true at the federal level as well. I mean, we've seen the president in the last week or so, I mean, kind of the pivot that he's had, he suggested that masks are more important, but he's kind of downplayed them before. And, meanwhile, some of his health officials have been suggesting that they would work. So, we've had just contradictions among some of the health officials and some of our elected leaders.
We have had on this program, since the pandemic began, a weekly Monday conversation about, what do we know about this virus that we didn't know last week? And I haven't had a single physician come on since those early days when some of that science was really still emerging and there was a nationwide mask shortage that have said that masks are just okay. They've really leaned heavily on the importance of them and encouraged people to wear them. Mike Card, let's bring you into the conversation, because the letter or communication email that Jonathan was referring to with the President of the United States said, I don't love wearing masks. They may be good, they may be just okay, or they may be great, and they might possibly get us back to our American way of life. The President is sort of rethinking or retooling, clarifying that communication. What are you sort of seeing here not from the public health standpoint, but from the political standpoint of leaders and how they communicate about this one element of mitigation?
Well, it's tough to see that this isn't advice being given for political purposes. And I can't speak so much for Governor Noem, but it's fairly clear with our president, who has largely dissed the use of wearing masks, talking about individuals' freedom and their constitutional rights, whereas on the other hand, for public health purposes, the Supreme Court has ruled that public health officials can mandate masks, can mandate vaccinations, and they've held this from 1905 through just a couple years ago. So the, you know, the Deborah Birx who on Sunday said that you need to wear a mask, Robert Redfield who last week said we could get control of the virus nationwide in 4 to 8 weeks. There isn't much doubt on the medical community side about we need to be covering our face with cloth in public to protect others. And there's even some evidence now that we can protect ourselves, but most of it's protecting others from the asymptomatic spread of the disease. And it seems to be a political touch point that is interfering with the public health message.
Governor Noem has been consistent, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in this concept of personal responsibility from the very beginning. There were, you know, guidance and suggestions and executive orders, but it always boiled down to you will have a choice, and that's the ground that she seems to be standing on still with mask wearing, is that you have a choice. And Mike, you found a TV feature, a news feature on MSNBC with an emergency room doctor who was being sarcastic and really slamming federal administration and leaders with this sort of, you know, coronavirus manual that he'd made up, which basically said take no responsibility on the inside. And so I want to use that as a jumping off point to this idea between personal responsibility and take no responsibility, and how this is playing out in the political spectrum, where, because this gets right down, Mike Carr, to how, what we think the role of government even is.
Absolutely. You know, what is our personal responsibility, again, probably ends at our fingertips with respect to our personal liberties. You know, I've mentioned this before, that if I can't punch you in the nose, that's not my right. On the other hand, what we've seen are many officials, religious and otherwise, saying your personal responsibility is also to protect others. You can't be a bystander, and you need to wear a face covering.
It seems, Mike, when you say it like that everyone should just agree that we're all in this together and that we can all do certain things together. But what I'm wondering from your perspective in political science, are you surprised that some of these things would become so politically charged and so divisive, because at our core, we don't all agree on what that looks like and what we want to hear from our leaders, what we expect to hear from our leaders, and what we think they're even allowed to do in our lives.
Or what we're allowing the government to do in our lives. You know, we have a great belief that government is not here to do much except provide for what are called public goods. Those are things that only the government can provide, national defense. Public health is also a public good, in the sense that once you provide the public good, it's provided to everyone. And so market mechanisms can't provide public health, just as they can't provide national defense. It requires a relatively strong government to provide for both national defense and public health. And we sometimes have to be told what to do, even if it violates our sense of personal liberties. You know, in South Dakota, if you cross the gate to when the roads have been closed, they may come get you, but they'll charge you for it because you're putting other people's lives at risk.
Jonathan Ellis, one of the things that Governor Noem was talking about with Laura Ingraham this week ahead of the Sturgis rally, which is just coming up this weekend, the official kickoff date anyway, was that we need to be more optimistic, and sort of this back and forth slamming the press for the negativity and the focus on the pandemic versus focusing on other things. And so I'm wondering if you might kick us off on that conversation. It's not, again, a surprise to hear a political leader say the press is being too negative. The press is driving a narrative that I don't like. Start there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the press is usually to blame for any politician, what happens to them. But, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with her saying that maybe we need to be optimistic in some senses, because at least in South Dakota, and the question is, do you declare victory? And of course, no, you don't declare victory because until this thing is over, because victory would mean just going back to how everything it was. And this disease in this state, by and large, has been managed through social distancing and some common sense behavior, if you look at the curve. But I do have some kind of my own, frankly, criticisms of how the press has reported this, of taking a simple day of data and trying to draw all these conclusions from it, bleak headlines based on, a couple data sets, comparing how one state is doing versus another when they have different policies. And so I think that actually there will be sort of a reckoning, I hope, within my industry about how we've handled reporting this. Because, take a look at, for example, Sweden. You can see bleak headlines about Sweden a month ago, just all over the place. And now you're starting to see headlines like, wow, they have this totally under control. And so, for one thing, we don't know until this thing plays out. And I've been saying this now, we won't know really what happened and how this all played out and who did things right, probably until the start of next summer. Okay. Assuming we have a vaccine then. And so I really think that, in sense of like, if the goal was to preserve hospital capacity, by and large, in a lot of places across the country, that goal has been achieved. Now, if the goal was among some people of eradicating it, well, that obviously didn't happen. But so it depends on what the goal was. And so certainly in South Dakota, we have not had a big surge in hospital cases. Our high was in May. And so as long as you can kind of continue to keep that, and that was the sense of that was the original goal, then yeah, I think there should be a sense of optimism. Now, the question is, with having events like Sturgis, packing bars, and forgetting about the social distancing and the behaviors that kind of led us to this sort of ability to manage the disease, if we stop doing that, then we could be in real trouble.
Yeah. And the governor talks about Sturgis, and she says, Mike Card, in this interview with on Fox News this week, we had professional bull riding. We had Mount Rushmore on July 3rd. This is not our first big event. And yes, this one's a little bit different. And Jonathan mentioned bars, which seems to be, more important to a Sturgis gathering than maybe to the Mount Rushmore gathering in general, if years past is an indication. Mike Card, a large event like this is, how do we look at that from a public health standpoint and from a politics standpoint?
Well, it would seem from a public health standpoint, to the extent that people are out of doors, there's less chance of person-to-person spread. There are more people coming in from out of state who may be infecting people in state, but then they will go back to where they came from or their next stop, by the time the virus has sufficient load to be tested as positive for the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. In some senses, we may not see what the effect is while we're here, while the rally is going on in South Dakota. On the other hand, what can we do with people's personal responsibilities in the sense that they choose to engage in these activities? We know that alcohol is inhibition. It lowers people's inhibitions, and so yeah. People are less likely to wear masks. And I haven't tried it, but I suspect it would be difficult to drink through a face covering.
I've heard stories of people cutting holes through them just to negate, to meet the mandate, but, make their own, have their own purposes. Jonathan, we talk about, I remember Governor Dennis Dugard, when he would come on, I'd always go home and balance my checkbook when I was done, because I was like, man, I'm not doing this right, because he is paying attention to every penny. And I'm wondering if, some people, when we talk about personal responsibility, people are making choices in South Dakota about whether or not they're going to go to Sturgis themselves, about whether or not they're going to send their kids to school. And in some ways, we talk about 2020 being a year of great reckoning. It's also a reckoning with, sometimes you make a choice and you're going to miss out on something, and that's your responsibility, not the government. So I wonder, Jonathan, if you've been noticing that as you talk to people and cover, everything from city council to committee meetings, or, hear how people are making those decisions. If some people are waking up to the first time that these decisions are up to them and they can't just rely on somebody else telling them what to do, and that can be interesting for some people.
Yeah, you know, as you sort through everything, I mean, there is a high degree of fear among some people. And there's sort of a laissez-faire, like, whatever, among other people. And so this really is, I mean, here, at least in South Dakota, where you do have to make decisions about, I mean, I've got two school-age kids, and so you make decisions. Are you going to put them, enroll them in school? And it's interesting if you compare, I think, frankly, if you compare attitudes here compared to people who were really in hard-hit areas by this virus, if you just kind of see it on social media, I mean, there is a fear. You can see people out and about. You know, I go out on a jog or something, and there are people social distancing and having beers or whatever. So there is a, you look at social media of people living in Seattle or something, or in Washington or New York, they won't go anywhere near other people. So it really is a different kind of world here in South Dakota. And yeah, you are in a position now of making those choices for yourself.
Yeah. I think in some ways, because our hospital, you know, we did flatten the curve like we did, our hospital count has been manageable. You know, we haven't, that fear has not come home yet. And it might still, I hope it does not. But there are many people who are living much closer to the crisis than we are. That's worth noting. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the news that Chris Langer decided now not to run for State House in the fall and to let her leadership position go and her campaign go. Jonathan, any thoughts on Chris Langer? It's hard not to think back to the end of the 2020 session and accusations made about her behavior. She didn't say that played a part in it, but it's not far from people's memories.
Not far at all. The last day of the legislative session, it kind of spawned an investigation, some complaints that she, and as the majority leader, and Senator Brock Greenfield, who were there on the Senate floor representing senators, because remember, this was done, most people were doing this virtually. This was a kind of a historic legislative meeting where most people were doing it virtually, but there were some people on leadership on the Senate floor. And it was a very long night. Very long day, and apparently after the Senate had gotten through some of its business, some bills went over the House side, and so in the meantime, those two were allegedly or accused of disappearing and going over to, I think, a lobbyist's home where they were having some imbibing and some alcohol with some other people, and then it sort of disappeared, and so the House had kind of reconciled some bills, and then everybody was waiting for the Senate to kind of whether or not they were going to go to committee or whether they were going to take the House version. And there was no one there to really facilitate that because they were gone. And so the session kind of dragged on a few more hours, at least according to some of the House critics. The session dragged on well into the early morning hours. I think 3 or 4 in the morning is when it finally concluded. You know, so that's how she departed. It was controversial. I don't know if there was pressure on her to withdraw from the race. She did not have a Democratic challenger, although there were two independents in the race, including Rick Noby, who's got quite a bit of name ID, being a former Sioux Falls mayor and a radio host. So I don't know if there was pressure on her to withdraw. I mean, the Republicans do have until August 11th, 5 o'clock, to put somebody on the ballot. So, but, you know, I would suspect that incident certainly played a role in her decision to not seek re-election.
Mike, anything you wanted to add about that race with Rick Noby in it and Republicans sort of deciding who they want to put in that seat?
Well, yesterday was the last day to replace a candidate by the party. So that sort of pushed the deadline up. It'll be very interesting to see as the legislature reconvenes, because there will be new majority leaders in both the House and the Senate, as Lee Quam was primaried out in his district largely because of his stance on an anti-vaccination bill. And with Langer gone in the Senate, that will mean a new person there. So it'll be exciting, if nothing else. It's going to be interesting to have a non-party person, I think, as we're calling them in South Dakota, or not affiliated with a political party, such as Rick Noby and Vandehoff, I believe is how that's pronounced. You know, when your name is Mike Card, everybody's name is difficult to pronounce.
Let's close before we let you go with a little bit about Kennedy Noem also departing to go to get a master's degree in Tennessee. And Jonathan, this would have been something she would have applied for back in 2019, most likely. I don't know that for a fact, but that's how it usually works. This is the time she's getting a big raise. And any thoughts about Kennedy Noem's departure from state government at this particular time, especially after being promoted?
Yeah, I mean, she was hired before I think she'd even finished her senior year at a pretty decent salary for South Dakota, around $40,000, and then through a series of raises got close to $60,000. And that was really one of the early missteps of the Noem campaign. Now, you know, I think Kennedy Noem has been in the background has been a very fierce advocate for her mother. And I think there's a lot of loyalty there, but, you know, even by South Dakota's sort of flirtation with nepotism over the years, and that would include with, you know, friends of Bill Janklow and Mike Brown's having family members in state and Dennis Dugard having family members in state government. The Kennedy Noem thing was a bit too much for a lot of people, and I think certainly that was one of her early missteps. And I think that that won't disappear as an issue, but I mean, at least from the Noem campaign's perspective, Kennedy Noem will no longer be there. But I do think that Kennedy Noem has been an important advisor for her mother, so that will be a loss for the governor.
Mike Card, any rumblings about there are a lot of people in South Dakota who don't make that salary and can't afford graduate school? Did taxpayers help get Kennedy the boost that she needed to not only have an application that was strong, but the money to pay for it?
Well, I'm sure that that's part of the criticism. I think the belief that she was enriched at taxpayer expense is a criticism. But on the other hand, Kennedy Noem is going to further her education in Nashville, so that's either Belmont or Vanderbilt. She has to do what's right for her and her career development. So I think there are multiple sides to this. We also know that the governor favors personal loyalty, and you can't get much more loyal in your own SIP than one of your offspring.
Sometimes.
Sometimes that's true.
There are some parents who are like, I don't know. In that case, have a very good supportive relationship.
There's two sides to it, one of which is that she was enriched at taxpayer expense that set her up. On the other hand, this may have been where she wanted to go and agreed to serve in Kristi Noem's administration for a couple years and gain some policy expertise that will help her in her further education.
Mike Card, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Jonathan, thank you as well.
Lori, thanks for putting up with me.